Thank you, Rabbi Crystal, and thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. You know, most people dread the task of sifting through and packing up one's household possessions, a process in which we are currently engaged. But it doesn't take much encouragement for me to spend hours getting lost, pouring through piles of personal memorabilia. Of course, my avowed purpose is to throw away long-ignored papers, lest we have to move them again, as we have from house to house over the decades. The truth is, I simply can't resist the opportunity to awaken old memories, or to see what our kids and grandkids now think of as ancient history come alive through the eyes of my much younger self. Why do I make this confession? Well, the message I'm sharing with you tonight started while I was rummaging through the remnants of an overstuffed file labeled high school, or what you might call a time capsule straight out of the 1960s. What I encountered were my personal connections with two causes that clearly energized me, and I dare say many of the other baby boomers in the congregation this Shabbat. I'm speaking of Zionism and the American movement for civil rights. My first real encounter with Zionism came in July 1965, when I joined my father on a visit to Israel organized by the Israel Bonds Office in Chicago. I recovered from my dusty files, the delegation's program, and a personal journal. I've never forgotten that we were received by Paula and David Ben-Gurion, who had moved to a kibbutz near Beersheba after he retired a couple of years earlier as Israel's first prime minister. But as I perused the program, I was amazed that we met with Ben-Gurion's successor, Levi Eshkol, as well as the president of the Supreme Court, the chair of the Bank of Israel, and a list of other legendary leaders like Golda Meir, Abba Eban, Shimon Peres, and Azer Weizmann. Our itinerary was light on the usual tourist destinations, but was filled with visits to educational institutions, hospitals, military bases, industrial facilities, kibbutzim, and Arab villages. I'm not sure how much I appreciated as a 14-year-old visitor, but looking back, I realize that I was witness to the unfolding Zionist dream of building a great nation. The welcome we received from so many officials also made clear that Israel needed and appreciated the help of American Jews. That feeling grew only stronger for me in the ensuing years as Israel was drawn into the Six-Day War and the Yom Kippur War. My memories of being stirred by the civil rights movement are more vivid, as it motivated me to get active in politics. That said, I was still struck by my recent discovery in a yellowed copy of our high school's alternative newspaper of a transcript of the remarks I delivered to a memorial assembly on Friday, April 5th, 1968, the day after Dr. Martin Luther King was assassinated in Memphis. I quoted extensively from Dr. King, whose birthday our country solemnly celebrates this weekend, including from his I Have a Dream speech. What most surprised me was the depth of feeling I discovered in my own words, which followed that quote. It was the 17-year-old version of me that said, "It was this beautiful dream that was shattered yesterday by an assassin's bullet. It was a racist society that pulled the trigger." As the Zionist and civil rights movements clearly moved me, I know they affected most American Jews growing up in those tumultuous times. Yet my purpose tonight is not to relive our personal memories. It's to reflect on how these two movements, which some might think of as having little to do with one another, are so closely linked, both in history and as we look forward. The essential values of those who built and led the Zionist and civil rights movements were strikingly similar. What's more, each movement evolved in response to similar realities, albeit on two different continents. In the case of Zionism, that reality was discrimination and persecution against European Jews, including in countries where Jews were emancipated from the ghettos, but not from being seen as the other. Even when Jews were granted the citizenship they coveted, most never felt accepted as full-fledged members of the nations among which they lived. For early Zionists, the word Jewish came to define their nationality more than it did their religion. As a young and revolutionary nation comprising people from widely varying backgrounds, the United States professed its intention to adopt universal values embodied in such Jeffersonian principles as all men are created equal. Our freedom of religion was guaranteed by the First Amendment. Belatedly, but emphatically, the 14th Amendment promised equal protection of the laws. As we all know, however, many Americans, especially those of color, have persistently been denied such protections. What the Zionist and civil rights movements accomplished in response to these challenges was historically stunning. In September 1897, after convening and presiding over the first Zionist Congress in Basel, Switzerland, Theodor Herzl wrote in his diary, "At Basel, I founded the Jewish state. If I said this out loud today, I would be answered by universal laughter. Perhaps in 5 years, certainly in 50, everyone will know it." And in May 1948, just 50 years later, the State of Israel was born. In the US, the civil rights movement took center stage only after the Second World War. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. made his mark as a leader during the Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott in 1955. He became the founding president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in 1957 and proclaimed at the conference's prayer pilgrimage that year, "Give us the ballot and we will no longer have to worry the federal government about our basic rights." Just 7 years later, Dr. King watched as President Johnson signed into law the historic Civil Rights Act of 1964, Title I of which was designed to deliver equal voting rights. On this Shabbat Shemot, we read in the Torah of the birth of Moses, his awakening Jewish social conscience, his first encounters with God, and his reluctant path to leadership. Many of Herzl's and King's followers reasonably attributed Moses-like qualities to their leaders. And in many ways, both Herzl and King were more successful than Moses in reaching their initial goals. But just like Moses, neither Herzl nor King would live to see the true achievement of what they set out to accomplish. Moses' calling was not simply to lead the children of Israel to the promised land, but also to inspire them to live up to God's elevated moral expectations of the Israelites. Likewise, Herzl's purpose was not simply to create a Jewish state in Palestine, and King's was not simply to witness the signing of the Civil Rights Act. You see, both of these modern Moses figures were big dreamers, and it is left to us to help realize the fullness of their dreams. Debbie Friedman memorably set Herzl's words to music, "Im tirtzu, ein zo agada," if you will it, it is no dream. But what was his Zionist dream? Was it simply the refrain, L'hiyot amchoshi be'artzenu, to be a free people in our own land? No. According to biographer Stephen Beller, Herzl, like earlier Zionists, believed that his Judenstaat, or Jewish state, would not only make Jews free, it would make them better as creators of a model state. What Beller meant by that became clear in Herzl's novel Altneuland, or Old New Land, published 5 years after the first Zionist Congress, in which Herzl describes what the future Jewish nation becomes. Two fictional characters of Altneuland say it best. One notes, because the Jews, now in their own state, treat minorities well, they are treated well as a minority elsewhere. For tolerance can and will always only rest on reciprocity. Another says, you should hold on to what made us great, liberality, tolerance, and love of mankind. Only then is Zion, Zion. I barely need to remind you about Dr. King's dreams, because he etched them into our national consciousness when he spoke before the massive assemblage at the Lincoln Memorial on that sweltering day in August 1963. I have a dream, he said, that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Even more memorably, Dr. King said, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Dr. King's vision was about more than just passing laws. It was about changing our attitudes and our culture. Such dreams cannot be legislated into being, nor realized overnight. They can only be realized when there is true equality of opportunity to vote, to work, and to live in a society of mutual respect. Movements are defined by the actions and words of more than a single Moses. And it's striking that several leading American Zionists were also champions of the civil rights movement. Two such towering leaders were Rabbi Stephen S. Wise and Rabbi Joachim Prinz. Wise, who was one of Herzl's most important allies in the U.S., wedded his sense of liberal Judaism with what Mark Rader cites as Rabbi Wise's heightened sense of ethnic national identity. But Wise did more than help launch the Federation of American Zionists in 1897. He was also a founder of the NAACP, calling the problem of racial discrimination in the U.S. the quintessential Jewish issue. As a young rabbi in Germany in the 1920s, Joachim Prinz was an outspoken Zionist. In his last sermon before being exiled by the Nazis in 1937, Prinz is quoted by Ben O'Cohn as saying, all around us is profanity, but our Jewish nationality is holiness. After arriving in the U.S., Rabbi Prinz first worked for Zionist organizations and then became spiritual leader of a large Reform congregation in Newark, New Jersey. There, he became an outspoken champion of civil rights and famously offered his pulpit to Dr. King. So it wasn't surprising that Prinz was invited to address the March on Washington immediately before King delivered his I Have a Dream speech. If you follow the link in Rabbi Kristol's message in the weekly TBS email, You can see the whole speech on video. Among the words spoken by Rabbi Prinz, which resonate with me today, are the following. When I was the rabbi of the Jewish community in Berlin under the Hitler regime, I learned many things. The most important thing that I learned under those tragic circumstances was that bigotry and hatred are not the most urgent problem. The most urgent, the most disgraceful, the most shameful, and the most tragic problem is silence. America must not become a nation of onlookers. Not merely Black America, but all of America. It must speak up and act, not for the sake of the Black community, but for the sake of the image, the idea, and the aspiration of America itself. If that is what acclaimed Zionists said about civil rights, what did Dr. King say about Zionism? Not much, it seems. But Professor Seymour Martin Lipset records that shortly before King's assassination, the civil rights leader responded to a derogatory comment about Zionism during a Q&A session with Black students at Harvard as follows. Don't talk like that. When people criticize Zionists, they mean Jews. You're talking anti-Semitism. That sentiment feels pretty important in 2020. Today, we're blessed with the legacy of early Zionists and forceful civil rights leaders whose dreams are unfinished. Our calling as faithful Reform Jews is to carry the baton handed to us by Theodore Herzl, by Martin Luther King Jr., and by so many others. We must speak up and act. We must live their values. You know best what that means for you as American citizens in this country. So I will conclude my remarks by describing one tangible thing that we as American Jews can and must do for the broader Jewish people. We must, each of us, exercise our right to vote to elect representatives in the 38th World Zionist Congress that will meet in Jerusalem this October. Yes, this is the same body that Herzl first convened in Basel in 1897. But rather than concerning ourselves with the creation of a Jewish state, we must act to ensure that Israel lives up to Herzl's dream and the vision contained in its Declaration of Independence. Israel will foster the development of the country for all its inhabitants. It will be based on freedom, justice, and peace as envisaged by the prophets of Israel. It will ensure complete equality of social and political rights to all its inhabitants, irrespective of religion, race, or gender. It will guarantee freedom of religion, conscience, language, education, and culture. We can discuss in the library after services exactly how the elections and the Congress itself work. Suffice it to say, each of us has the opportunity to vote online starting this Tuesday, January 21st, through March 11th. For Jewish American delegates who will comprise more than one-third of the next Zionist Congress. I not only implore you to exercise your right to vote, I ask that you vote Reform. A slate of candidates that includes both Rabbi Perlin and me. I sincerely believe that our slate is the one whose values comport most closely with the authentic Zionist ideal of building a Jewish, democratic, and pluralistic state of Israel to be a light unto the nations. I look forward to talking with you after services and over the next few weeks about the ways in which the Reform Zionist movement in America and our allies leverage our representation in the Congress. Together, we work for a strong democratic civil society in Israel, for an end to discrimination based on religion, race, gender, and sexual orientation, and for a two-state solution that brings long-term peace. We advocate effectively for Israeli recognition and financial support for the many diverse expressions of Jewish religious identity. Specifically, this includes the Israeli Movement for Progressive and Reform Judaism, the umbrella organization of more than 50 Reform congregations and parent of the Israel Religious Action Center. In fact, our movement in Israel has received some $20 million since 2015 as a result of our success in the World Zionist Congress elections that year. As a retired financial executive, I can assure you of extraordinary returns on your investment of 2 to 3 minutes and the $7.50 processing and security fee it takes to vote. But now, I return once more to Dr. King's words. Just as I did on April 5th, 1968, at the Mather High School Assembly in Chicago. He said, "The only hope to save the world is to save America. Without a free America, there will be no free world. Let's not burn America down. Let's take her like she is and rebuild her." In that spirit, I say to you tonight, the only hope for a vibrant, values-driven Jewish people is a Jewish, democratic, egalitarian, and pluralistic state of Israel. To those who would bring Israel down because of her imperfections, and to those who purport to strengthen Israel with an ignoble form of nationalism, I say, let's take Israel like she is and rebuild her into the nation envisaged by our prophets, both biblical and modern. And let's start on Tuesday by voting Reform in the World Zionist Congress elections. Thank you, and Shabbat Shalom.